We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News, the only podcast with a 95% efficacy rate and TGA approval. So it's time to get your mandated dose of the unconventional and the outright stupid. First thing though, it's just a quick reminder that I have a digital show of my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, as part of the Leicester Comedy Festival, which can be bought tickets for about £5. I think I put it up for about £5. And I have two live shows, live in-person shows at the upcoming Adelaide Fringe Festival. 5 nights of the very same storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, and 2 shows of my News Quiz podcast, which I think if you're listening to this, you're probably a fan of the News Quiz podcast. It's called The Weird News Quiz, with some guests from across the festival answering questions about the weirdest and most wonderful news. It's the sort of stuff that you might see on a show like this, so who knows, you may even know some of the answers. Tickets are on sale now, so support this show by buying a ticket. I mean, even if you can't do the live show, you could check out the digital show through the Leicester Festival. But until then, let's get to the news! Restaurant chain Ribs and Burgers says it's investigating a memo shared to staff which described speaking languages other than English at work as disgusting and disrespectful, and that it speaks completely against our seagrass culture of hashtag togetherness, and threatened disciplinary action for anyone doing so. And I see where they're coming from. Nothing sows a feeling of togetherness like mindless discrimination and a general air of suppressive threats. And the thing I find really brings people hashtag together is when they unionize over oppression. Scientists have discovered that solar cells treated with capsaicin, the compound that makes chili peppers hot, have been found to be more efficient at converting solar energy. Well, I suppose we had to have a benefit from that one person in the office who puts chili on everything. No, Kim, this does not mean that you can finally put chili in your cereal. Nobody's signing off on that. I don't care if there's milk right there in the bowl. We have to deal with the effects of your IBS. It's a shared toilet, that's why. Many natural organic compounds are being tested to see if they have the same effect as the capsaicin. Though, some scientists are saying that they simply will not put pineapple on solar panels, nor will they use solar panels that have had pineapples on them. Multiple women have used the dating app Bumble following the attack on the US Capitol last week as a means to lure unsuspecting riders and then turn them over to the FBI. Before you know it, Bumble became the largest honeypot operation ever conducted. It's dozens of Jane Bonds defending democracy by asking for dick pics, in this case, those pics being pics of you acting like a dick. Sniffing out suspicious men like Angelo Bolzac, Richard Thrust, Peter Johnson, Willie Wanker, John Thomas, Chopper Oldman, Cox Akimbo, and Ramrod. And while many social platforms were removing Trump and attempting to appear progressive on January 14th, Bumble issued another statement saying that it had temporarily removed its politics filter to prevent misuse. And look, it just makes sense as a decision, really, because if there was one thing that Bumble was not created for, it was not created so that women could have a modicum of control over the world around them. Personally, I think of photos of you storming the Capitol the same way that these kind of men think about celebrity nudes. Well, if you didn't want anyone to see them, why did you take them? A Republican politician from Staten Island who screamed "Hail Hitler" during a protest against New York's coronavirus health protocols issued an apology. when asked if she meant to yell, she said nein. She actually meant to yell, mein Führer. Don't you just hate it when you mix up your words and you end up delivering a Führerian slip? Leader of the British House of Commons and Victorian ghost stuck haunting the House of Commons, Jacob Rees-Mogg, has claimed that fish are happier after Brexit. Now, the Speaker of the House, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, rebuked the statement in the most English way that he could, just to really remind people that Brexit had happened and that they would be quintessentially British from now on. When he didn't object to the statement, rather, he just confirmed, obviously, there's no overwhelming evidence for that. However, Rees-Mogg also claimed the government was dealing with the issue as quickly as possible. But Lindsay Hoyle has failed to fact-check him on that clearly untrue statement. Police in Bali have been trying to find ways to ensure that people found not wearing a mask in public are punished in a somewhat unconventional way. They're making non-mask wearers do push-ups. Are you kidding me, Bali? Aside from people with a medical exemption, you've noticed who the majority of non-mask wearers are, haven't you? It's always people who are the kind of guy who would spend all of his spare time in the gym. This is why they don't wear the mask. Hey, I'm indestructible. I actually bench press other bench presses in order to stay in shape. That's how I get things done. All you are doing is giving them an extra excuse to work out. And this is not going to be a deterrent from them not wearing a mask. In fact, it's going to be a reason for them to show off in public. What you want to be doing is coming up a way to make them regret the decision and not think, oh, I should probably do that again. Get in some extra push-ups. You're just making them stronger. That's all the headlines for today. Let's get to the bigger news. To begin with, Australia Day news. Scott Morrison has attacked Cricket Australia for the decision to drop the term Australia Day from Big Bash League promotions. Three Big Bash clubs will wear Indigenous jerseys, and Cricket Australia decided to drop the Australia Day term in a bid to normalise conversations over the date's history. Morrison, however, has said, I think a bit more focus on cricket and a bit less focus on politics would be my message for Cricket Australia. Whereas getting Morrison to focus on anything that isn't sport or a holiday is damn near impossible. Look, I don't know that Morrison is the best person to be lecturing people about trying to make their past disappear when he was mysteriously fired from his Tourism Australia job and has been the centre of a large number of well-publicised scandals and fuck-ups. You'd think doing anything you could to keep your past quiet would be right up his alley. Seems exactly like the kind of things he's into. He definitely strikes me as more of a rewriting history type, typical of someone with a marketing degree from the Goebbels Memorial School of Big Beeps and Whoopsies, claiming, you know, when those 12 ships turned up in Sydney, it wasn't a particularly flash day for the people on those vessels either. This being a reference to the convicts brought aboard the ships on the First Fleet. There he is, the leader of our country, demonstrating the newfound oneness that we changed the anthem for. Yeah, the Indigenous people were slaughtered, but there was very hurt people on both sides. On both sides. And as such, we will from now on be including our controversial Australian of the Year among our Australia Day honours. And they're not even going to do a thing to remove it, because in their own words, in a system that recognises hundreds of people each year, it is inevitable that each list will include some people who others believe should not be recognised. So prepare for 2022 nominees Blair Cottrell and Peter Crejlin for their services to creating a horrible national discourse. Like previous recipient and lizard fueled by raw onions, Tony Abbott. But this is something that we can take control of. We, as a collective. Because it turns out, any Australian can nominate someone for an award. That's me. And statistically, by demographic of my audience, you. We are mostly Australians. Nominations are assessed by the Honours and Awards Secretariat, considered by the Council of the Order of Australia, and then before recommendations are made and given to the Governor General. So to complete a nomination, you'll need to send examples of how they've demonstrated outstanding qualities, what they have done to make things better for others, and the role or areas in which they have excelled. The period of time or dates of service, if you know them, and evidence of other awards or recognitions received by the nominee. You can send these through to this online form. I'll put it up on the screen here. It'll be in the links for the show, but it's formsbusiness.gov.au. I'm not going to read all that out, but you get that. It's on the business.gov.au site for the podcast listeners. And then we can make 2022 a very different set of honours recipients. I mean, I bet we could even get Australian icon and beloved entertainer Blackboard up on the nominations. And to be honest, in his own words,
the one and only indispensable Blackboard that everyone is waiting for.
It's about time. Getting Blackboard nominated?
Nothing.
Hurry up.
Government spending spree news now. Hodgepodge of bad takes and misleading opinions stitched together and brought to life by a mad journalist, News Corp, has released this article, daring to lecture the public on wasted taxpayer money over monies spent on admittedly unconventional research after they themselves received at least $10 million in taxpayer money. The article in question is trying to get your mum angry about the false premise that Australian taxpayers are forking out millions of dollars for research into fringe topics like gender equity and jazz, and the link between parenting practices and socialism in Laos. Now, these things are being researched, but to imply that we are wasting taxpayer money on it is exactly the kind of petulant, oh, what about me-ism that I've come to expect from news.com.au, which is the digital news example of digging through your garbage for a scoop. Trying to turn the poor against each other for taking your money when really they should be angry at the government for providing an inadequate amount of compensation during a pandemic. But you wouldn't hear a bad word about the coalition, not while it's still profitable for News Corp. You don't shoot the horse until after it's broken its leg. Education Minister and man constantly on alert for flash mobs of angry students, Dan Tehan, was one to sign off on the research, despite his penchant for kicking students out of their chosen degrees, insisting that ARC grants are only awarded to the highest quality researchers and research projects. So if you aren't sure, the ARC is the primary source of advice on the government on investment in the national research effort. And that is exactly why News Corp is so upset. Murdoch stopped listening to experts a long time ago, round about the time that they started insisting that there was no such thing as global warming, replacing all experts with reckless opinion slingers, pew pew pew, the fastest hot takes in the Western media. Here we see News Corp pretending to care about ordinary Australians, despite having Corey, too conservative even for the Liberal Party Bernardi, as a commentator dressed in news clothing, decrying the life-saving pandemic stimulus weeks before Victoria entered its second lockdown. And here they are, pretending to care about us ordinary families that struggle to pay the bills and put food on the table, followed by some fake outrage over where government money has been spent, as opposed to here, where the Courier Mail was suggesting about Michael McCormack's recent statements about JobKeeper recipients that the minister's dole bludger bashing was right. Then again, here, we see them calling an admittedly criminal lady a dole bludger, and here, we can see them doing it again, this time for a Taekwondo champion who stole from Centrelink. And look, maybe you think I am picking bad examples, as these people had actually engaged in some form of actual welfare theft. But that does bring me back to a little point that I've made on this show before. The government is stealing taxpayer money all the time, and nobody has ever introduced a single one of them as some sort of dole bludging tax cheat. And here, let's have a look at this. News Corp, again, doing a deep dive into the biggest dole bludger suburbs, also known as the suburbs that the underemployed are forced to live in because they're priced out of most every suburb and are struggling even on the paltry wage that they can scrape together from their underpaying, underemployment. And the nice thing is, I can point to almost any newspaper and find an example. As I don't know if I've already mentioned it, 70% of all the newspapers in Australia are owned by a man who finds the poor so disdainful, he does everything that he can to make them angry at all times. That way, they will turn on each other and they won't see that the thing that is actually causing them the most harm, dole bludging newspapers, scraping up government money that could be going into our pockets, that could be sustaining our systems. These newspaper companies and media companies that take millions and millions of taxpayer dollars with little to no plan, sometimes without even applying, and occasionally to not do a job that it was given the very money to do. Like here, when Murdoch's company received a share of a $50 million subsidy to keep regional newspapers operated, and according to former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, quote, like most other things with Murdoch, when he says these titles will become digital only on their coverage, or will be streamlined into broader regional papers, it's a lie. This coverage will practically vanish. The proof is in the axing of 800 jobs, meaning that the local news dies. The former Australian Prime Minister added, I suppose the loss of those 800 jobs don't really count as ordinary Australians struggling to get by, as they have sucked at the dark nectar of Rupert Murdoch, fundamentally transforming them from humans with a capacity to care about other humans into an extension of the News Corp hive mind, speaking as one with a single thought and voice dark and deep from within, almost otherworldly, as though it speaks from a darker dimension, when really, the dark truth is, the voice speaks from the same world as you and I come from. The terror is coming from inside the house. In October's federal budget, the government announced $1 billion in new research funding for Australian universities. This was to ease the financial pressures caused by a sharp drop-off in international students due to COVID-19. A fact that appears quite late in this article and is not repeated, and fails to explain that the money is simply, like most businesses at the moment, propping up a sector, not actually handouts. Because, as truly, the money for these grants is normally funded by international students. A budget that no longer exists for a sector that wasn't being propped up by JobKeeper, even though some churches were, and they don't even pay taxes. And suddenly, how the money given to this sector to prop it up is spent is magically a concern. You know, if it's being used to prop up bonuses for bosses rather than to do its namesake and keep jobs, yeah, that is a concern. I have been receiving government money during the pandemic, and guess what? I've spent hundreds of dollars on chicken. But you'd never call it a waste of taxpayer money. Well, some of you might, but you shouldn't call it a waste of taxpayer money. Chicken, and its many various ways of being prepared, have been keeping me going during the months-long lockdown in Melbourne. You might even say that I was conducting a long-term study on the impact of consuming heroic amounts of chicken during a lockdown. And I can tell you, the results are in, and it makes me feel pretty damn good. Let's further examine the government spending. Back to New South Wales, the Groundhog Day of corrupt states. You know, like, each time it's slightly different than the last time, but as far as we know, we will be stuck in this loop of corruption for all eternity. So, the New South Wales government has spent less than 13 million of its $50 million rescue package for arts organisations hit by the COVID-19 shutdown. A big surprise for a government that is determined to defund the arts sector with more fury than it would ever, ever take to any sort of police force. Though it must be noted that the only thing that ever dies due to overfunding of the arts is a bad comedian on stage. When the scheme was first announced 6 months ago, the New South Wales government said the $50 million rescue and restart funding would be distributed in two rounds, with the second round of grant applications now actually open to access, which is roughly $30.1 million. But there is a small question of what happened to the mystery of the disappearing $7 million left over from the first round. See, they thought that we wouldn't notice because there's never any money in the arts. But the argument could be made, if they were so bold, that the disappearance of these $7 million is one hell of a magic trick. David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear. So fucking what? The statue costs $5.4 million, and that is way under what we are making disappear here. It's time for New South Wales Arts Minister Don Harwin to don his top hat and cape and hit the road. He has a hell of an act on his hands. Now, look, traditionally you might argue that they make a disappeared object return. But you know what? That is played out. The real magic is in making something disappear forever, without a trace. Even the Roman Empire still has remnants left. They couldn't make it disappear entirely. Look guys, magic has moved on. It was doing card tricks in the street in leather pants, and now it's making government money disappear. However, Guardian Australia has heard claims from industry sources that the $7 million was in fact dished out amongst New South Wales arts organisations at the minister's discretion, outside the formal rescue and restart grant application processes, and that the process was conducted with ridiculous secrecy. Ridiculous Secrecy is actually the name under which Don Harwin is performing his touring magic show. Ridiculous Secrecy. He also does kids' parties and bar mitzvahs for those that are interested. And yet, Don's office denies that money has been dispersed at his discretion and said that the $7 million was a provision for vulnerable companies. Kind of like arts companies at the moment. Quite vulnerable because they can't put on shows. So, seems he has actually made the money reappear, but instead of reappearing as sustaining arts grants for a dying industry, it is reappearing as a best-selling fiction novel in which the protagonist, a handsome magician who is also a spy, has infiltrated a corrupt government and is siphoning off the money in order to get it out of the hands of the nefarious ne'er-do-wells and into the next major motion action picture, Ridiculous Secrecy. Looking forward to it when cinemas open again at some point ever. However, let's now move over to Canada, the preferred identity of Americans when they used to be allowed to travel. Just like an Australian overseas will not deny it, if you confuse them with a New Zealander. It's a pretty safe identity to have at the moment. In fact, we hope that your confusion becomes legally binding. Artists across Canada are facing demands from the Canada Revenue Agency, the Canadian equivalent of the ATO, asking that they repay emergency coronavirus benefits. The agency is also insisting that some artists are not eligible for payments under new income supports, leaving them to wonder why they have been excluded and how they're going to get by. Taking the self-perpetuated myth of the struggling artist to its natural conclusion, a state-mandated period of artistic suffering and depression to act as a muse in order to usher in a Canadian renaissance. It's been a long time since we've had a renaissance, and frankly, I think we're overdue. We've had two pandemics, two world wars, and two movies set in the grown-up cinematic universe. But only one recognized period of enlightenment and artistic development and discovery? For shame. We have had marvels that those blundering fools could never dare to have dream of, like shoes with rolly wheels in them. The wonders. Look, the problem at issue here is that the CRA statement states that artistic grants do not count as income for the purposes of meeting the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit threshold. Now, to be eligible, recipients must have had at least $5,000 in net income in 2019, or the 12 months preceding their application. Although the CRA has been telling artists that such grants don't count as income under the CERB program. They do count as income at tax time, however. You see, the thing about art is, it's a fundamental job. Assuming that jobs in the arts still exist as anything more than a quaint footnote in history, is to make people question the nature of existence. And these artists are simply too good at their job. They have caused the Canadian Revenue Agency to question the very nature of the money that they have given. To ask that most fundamental of questions asked by artists, what even is income? If such a thing can be defined, when is income not income? Well, when it is given by the government, it seems. Bringing to question the nature of a minister's salary. Is it truly to be considered income as it was given by the government and not truly earned? And without it, they would not have earned more than $5,000 in the previous year. And if it is an income, can they have income tax returns? Turning the whole artistic expression into more of a philosophy doctorate. And we can all agree, nobody wants to fund philosophers. Go back to pondering the fundamental questions of existence, you pretentious slacker wannabes. Who do you think you are? No, really, in the grand picture of things, who are you? What do you stand for? And why are you? At least have the courage to admit that you don't want to work just like the rest of us. Don't try and pass off your intention to form a oneness with your couch as a quiet introspection. That's not a meditative state. I heard you snoring. You were napping. Responsible, irresponsible government news. The Netherlands, the country that surrounds Amsterdam, also known as Australia's one that got away. Oh, the Dutch. Why did you have to arrive in WA? We understand there is very little happening over there, but now it has a thriving meth industry, and that could have been yours. You could have been totally in charge of that, but you gave it all away. The Netherlands government has resigned en masse over a RoboDebt-style welfare fraud scandal that wrongfully drove thousands of families to financial ruin. And this is how you can tell that they're actually a progressive country, because there are actually consequences to government misappropriation scandals. It's an amazing situation to see. Because here, we see Prime Minister Mark Rutte. Here, we see Prime Minister Mark Rutte as he cycled to tender his resignation to the country's king, William Alexander. Even his disgraceful resignation has a quiet, calm dignity to it, unlike some other disgraceful ends to a leader's reign that I can think of. Although he is definitely not wearing a helmet, and that, boys and girls, is a terrible example to be setting for the kids, for some of the adults, and for one of my exes in particular, which was a particular sore spot of contention, so thanks a lot for that, Root. And maybe you're thinking, of course he left with quiet dignity. This is the leader of the Netherlands. It's all getting high and hanging out with sex workers and casual racism at Christmas. Nobody would expect otherwise. But you'd be wrong. And I think a little racist? I'm not sure about that entirely. At the very least, culturally lazy and ignorant. I think that's fair to say. Because old Marky Mark and the Money Bunch over here are, in fact, the Conservative Party, having done such acts as... In 2007, he warned that something was wrong with the country, saying that the silent majority would no longer tolerate immigrants who come and abuse our freedom. Attempting a herd immunity strategy during the initial coronavirus outbreak instead of, you know, trying to help people. And his popularity and choices have found him to be the least popular minister in a public vote, taking the top spot with 34% of the vote. A landslide! Not all people who ride bikes are good guys. Don't forget Mrs. Gulch. She was an equally avid bike rider and dog killer. Rutte took an admirable stance for a government that was around in 2020, telling reporters, "The buck stops here," adding that his government would wear the blame. Said innocent people have been criminalized and their lives ruined. Meanwhile, here in Australia, the government couldn't even find an apology that takes the more conventional shape of any sort of apology.
It's a difficult job, and it deals with Australians in many very sensitive circumstances. And of course, I would deeply regret any hardship that has been caused to people in the conduct of that activity. The government has many difficult jobs that it has to do dealing with Australians in very sensitive circumstances, and that is true, particularly at this time. And it is our instruction that we would hope that all agents of the government, when pursuing the debt recovery option, that they would be sensitive to people's circumstances. And in relation to the particular gentleman that you referred to, that is a very distressing situation that you've raised. And I would apologise to any hurt or harm in the way that the government has dealt with that issue, and to anyone else who's find themselves in those situations. But the issue, Mr. Speaker, is the one of showing how the government can best do this.
Rather, apologising for the system not working and for the staff possibly not being as sensitive as they could be when being engaged to do the cold, heartless robot work of stealing money from the poor and giving it back to the government. Scott Morrison definitely wouldn't care for this more direct approach of accountability and responsibility. Ironically, he takes his inspiration from a different famous Dutch person, the winding world of M.C. Escher, where up is down and down is up, and you focus super hard and you try to make sense of this one staircase as he runs up off another staircase at a direct right angle, evading scrutiny once again. It's a fun game for everyone. As the election is already due on March 17th, in the Netherlands, that is, to manage the coronavirus crisis, Rutte's cabinet will remain in place as sort of like a caretaker government. Australia has much the same arrangement with its current government. We pay them and they just sort of amble about the grounds, dusting off the cobwebs and appearing suddenly in frame with a sharp sting of music. Creating a seed of doubt in the mind of the audience, in this case the voters, that they are up to something. Though usually they just end up being an unnecessarily odd member of staff who lingers on in a job that they should have retired a long, long time ago from. The resignation follows a parliamentary inquiry last month that concluded that bureaucrats at the tax service had wrongly accused families of fraud over childcare subsidies. The inquiry report said about 10,000 families had been wrongfully forced to repay tens of thousands of euros of subsidies, in some cases leading to unemployment, bankruptcies, and divorces. Sound familiar? It describes such mismanagement over a decade as an unprecedented injustice. But I think it sounds more like a predictable conservative poor bashing action. Taking people who don't have time to raise a family, accusing them of a crime, and then forcing them to prove that they didn't do it, lest they be guilty by default. Which, if I'm honest, is probably the best way to have a government be run. Every new government starts guilty of a series of crimes, and by the end of their term, it's up to them to have proved that they didn't commit the crimes, or else they lose all parliamentary benefits and are forced to live on the welfare system that they most likely didn't uphold and support. Or, if they're particularly biased politicians, they will attempt to take a job as a lobbyist. Whichever works out. Though that criminal record certainly will make it tough to get a police check approval, so they'll probably end up on welfare. A more appropriate way of describing it was actually offered forward by Root, who said, "This is about tens of thousands of parents who were crushed under the wheels of the state." Just listen to that. And as accurate and self-reflective as that is, making words pretty doesn't free you from your crimes. Otherwise, Oscar Wilde certainly would never have ended up in prison. Many of the families were targeted based on their ethnic origin or dual citizenship, which isn't really a surprise. Immigrants are the preferred punching bags of most governments. The more isolated, locked up, and in genuine danger in the country we send them back to, the more they seem to revel in doing it. We go immigrants. If you're going through a period of like white migration, then we go poor, but not like specifically dole bludgers and public purse sponges. Then if you're really having a hard time keeping order, you can attack the lefty elites. That's sort of like the general order of punching. And the Australian government should actually take hope from this story. Not only do they get to point at the normally flawless Scandinavian countries and say, "See? Socialism bad too. Best stick with us." But as Orlando Cadilla, a lawyer representing about 600 families, told Dutch Radio, that people had been targeted as a result of ethnic profiling by bureaucrats who picked out their foreign-looking names. So see, Coalition, there is something to be taken from this. We, as a country, can be more like the Dutch. They still do a racism from time to time. They just do it with a slightly more progressive base built into it. It's, you know, maybe you could consider it a more progressive racism. And you can just, like, sprinkle in some more supportive policies to make us a bit more like the Dutch. We can do it. I believe in us. We can do it. Defending atrocity news. Federal Liberal MP and bank manager from a Mary Poppins film, Craig Kelly, has accused social media companies of attempting to purge comments about unproven COVID-19 treatments after he received a warning from Facebook over his claims regarding the anti-parasitic drug ivermectin, proving definitively that he has misunderstood the Purge films in their entirety. There certainly wasn't a scene in any of the Purge films in which a group of people were defending themselves from a vicious gang looking to administer them with some warnings, using the kind of gusto that comes from looking like a bank manager in a Mary Poppins film. He went ahead with the post anyway, even after being told by the Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt why his readings on the studies were flawed. Why let a little thing like facts or expert opinion get in the way of a good story? I mean, that's what Chopper Reed always said, never let the truth get in the way of a good yarn. And we love a good criminal in this country. Kelly has continued to publicly campaign on these flawed interpretations, and in one case, alleged that a government body was censoring him and fellow backbencher George Christensen. The little politician who cried censorship has continued to spout his conspiracy theories and cries of censorship despite having almost 75,000 Facebook followers, nearly half the size of his own electorate, and then residents in Craig Kelly's electorate of Hughes saying that he regularly blocks constituents from his page when they disagree with his climate change denialism and advocacy of unproven treatments for COVID-19. Oh, it must be so hard to be so oppressed. I don't know how he manages to survive. I mean, if he hadn't been blocking so many people, he might have had more followers than there were people in the electorate. But, oh, heavy is the finger that shares the conspiracy theory. Oh, it's such a burden to bear. A group called We Are Hughes has formed to run an independent against Kelly at the next federal election, saying his views, particularly on climate change, do not represent those of his constituents. Those views mostly focusing on climate change skepticism and denial up until 2020, at which point Kelly took a wild right turn, a hard right turn, some might say an alternate right turn, spending much of last year promoting unproven treatments, opposing lockdowns, and claiming that masks don't work during the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, he's doing the Lord's work, people. That Lord being Lord Nurgle, the Plague Lord, the Lord of Pestilence, the Fly Lord, and the Earth Father, all praise. Labour's health spokesperson, Chris Bowen, seized on the controversy, arguing the social media giant had called out Conspiracy Craig's medical disinformation campaign when the PM had failed to. But let's be real here. Conspiracy Craig isn't the best nickname. I mean, don't get me wrong, a little alliteration goes a long way. It's fun and it gives the illusion of being clever without the hassle of having to rhyme, and nobody likes the sharing of conspiracy theories. But it is just so basic when there are so many things in his past that could be brought forth to wave in his stupid face. Like his voting. He voted in support of the plebiscite instead of, you know, doing his job. He also supported the right for celebrants to refuse to marry same-sex couples instead of just lying and saying that they were already booked that weekend. Decreasing ABC and SBS funding, decreasing welfare payments, drug testing welfare recipients, getting rid of Sunday and public holiday rates, reducing corporate tax rates, stopping people who arrive by boat from ever entering the country. He voted in favour of the cashless welfare card. He voted against ending detention in Nauru and voted strongly against an NBN. So he doesn't want you to stream super fast porn. Sorry, I mean Netflix. He doesn't want you to stream super fast Netflix. You might point out this is one of a long line of being on the wrong side of history, and how it is the only train that seems to consistently show up at Craig Kelly Station, the Minister for Crackpot Theories, or, if you insist on alliteration, the Minister for Madness. And here he is again, this time standing by the US Capitol Antifa claim despite discredited evidence. Seeing here, next to his old mate, George Christensen, forming the parliamentary super duo Tweedledum and Tweedledumber, the Wonder Twins, because every time they speak, they have to stop and wonder, could they possibly be serious? And why wouldn't they speak like that? It's not like the leaders of the party are going to put a stop to them. As evidenced here, by acting Prime Minister and man trying to teleport into the middle distance as he is confused by the words coming out of his own mouth, Michael McCormack, criticizing Twitter for censoring former... Oh, well, that feels good. Let me just say that again. Former US President Donald Trump. Now, that's a good sentence to say, and it doesn't even have any alliteration. It's just full of facts. Oh, so good. Oh, anyway, then Morrison himself would go on to fail to condemn the Congress attack, later upgrading his status from no comment to it's complicated, suggesting Donald Trump's comments before the US Capitol riots were incredibly disappointing. 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 No, unexpected onions are disappointing. I would go so far as to say that they are infuriating. A hole in a sock is disappointing. 5% battery on my phone is disappointing. These comments are dangerous, treasonous, even as the future musical about the Trump era will state, sedition, sedition. They are no good. Though it must be acknowledged that McCormack managed to muster firmer criticism of Trump, describing the president's refusal to concede defeat and his inflammatory tweets as unfortunate. I mean, someone really needs to get this guy a dictionary. He doesn't seem to know the meaning of the words that he is using. And when pressed on the matter, Morrison said, it was not for him to provide lectures to anybody. A tactic I'd love to see him implement when it comes to the poor, to welfare recipients that he has been systemically hunting and attempting to destroy through malicious debt since he was the Minister for Social Services in 2015. Now, this could be because in December, Trump awarded Morrison a Legion of Merit, America's highest military honor. And you always try to put out a little for the people who give you nice jewelry. But when we look at the macro level of it all, I don't know why all these virtue signalers are crying out against our Craig Kellys and our George Christensens and Scott Morrisons for defending atrocity after atrocity. After all, it's exactly why they were put in power. They are simply doing the exact thing that voters voted for them to do. It's why they were put in power. It is the will of the people, ladies and gentlemen. You know, people are always complaining all the time that politicians are dishonest, that they don't get anything done that they said that they would get done. Well, here they are, achieving huge shitbag goals, just like they were voted in to do. Which reminds me of this Tory mayoral candidate here in London who has suggested that homeless people in the capital would be able to save up a £5,000 deposit to buy and share in a newly built affordable home. Doing exactly what he was supposed to do. downplaying the struggle of the poor. I cannot spell it out enough for you people. These guys are living up to all of their electoral promises. Fruit picking news now. The ABC has reported that vegetable growers in Victoria's Lynnau Valley have had to dump $150,000 worth of celery crops due to a drastic shortage of seasonal workers caused by the COVID-19 travel bans. Australian vegetable and potato industry chair Bill Bulmer has a lot of mouthing off to do. Here we can see that he gum flapped. Well, it's a sad statement to say, but with JobSeeker and JobKeeper, the locals don't seem to want to take up the manual labour. The standard wage for casual workers is around $27 per hour, so it's reasonable pay for unskilled labour, so it's not an issue of not paying enough money. An angry stance for someone to take. An angry stance to take for someone desperately trying to convince people that they're gonna have a good time if they come out to the farm and pick some fruit in the hot sun for hours and hours and hours on end for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. Especially now that it is still not really a seller's market in that the ratio of jobs to people is desperately low, but farmers don't have a bevy of workers to exploit as part of just wanting to stay here for a little bit longer, and are not really used to having to be nice in order to get people to do their dirty work. This is a whole industry built on the exploitation of workers who, in order to get their visa, must have done fruit picking for at least 3 months or 88 days, either in one block or in separate blocks, have worked in an eligible postcode of regional Australia, provide evidence of specified work, so maybe payslips or employer references, and must apply before your first working holiday visa expires if you are in Australia. And this is one of those experiences that you can't just lie about or exaggerate on your resume, like that time that you said you were shift supervisor, because look, you did all the shift supervisor stuff anyway, and it was never formalized because you said no when it was first offered, as you didn't expect to be there for so many years and you didn't want to entrench yourself within the company. But then they held on to that and used it as a weapon for the remainder of your time there, or something like that. So I hear. However, the federal government previously announced a $1 million scheme to encourage city-based job seekers to relocate to regional areas to work on farms months ago. So what happened to that? I mean, the scheme mostly consisted of billions of dollars of water infrastructure, extended instant asset write-off, and telling farmers who employ young, out-of-work Australians that they could also benefit from a new government wage subsidy that they called JobMaker, implying that they will provide employers with $200 a week for each new job created for 16 to 29 year olds, and $100 a week for any new job created for 30 to 35 year olds. I mean, still nothing for people aged over 35, because if they haven't sorted their life out by 35, best write them off, right? Right? They're all done? Let's focus on the next generation. Those last ones are a write-off, and not even a good one, like an instant asset write-off. More of a depreciation of value write-off. Unless, of course, you're thinking of becoming the PM, or a president, then you're good to go and start a job at 78. I mean, it's the only way to secure a reliable pension at this point. Best we all give it a go. Just get in line and we'll all get our government payments soon enough. Apparently there is $9 million set aside over the next 3 years to ensure the welfare of workers on the seasonal worker program, but it is not clear how it will be spent. I mean, I can tell you what is clear is that it certainly won't be spent on paying the workers. That is one thing that we can tick off for sure. Because while some farmers flaunted attractive wage figures saying that it was possible to make $3,000 per week, even in the face of overwhelming evidence that just isn't possible, the sheer determination of these farmers to lie to the youth and to attempt to get them to work themselves to impossible standards is the very embodiment of the battler spirit. Convincing young people who don't know any better to just throw themselves into a no-win situation again and again for some vague and unattainable ideals and promises. It's the spirit that this country was built on. That and the destruction of non-white people, which, to be fair, is the preferred method of the farmer, to destroy non-white people. But as we can't get people in the country, suddenly our greatest asset, that gigantic moat that's around us, has become the downfall of our fruit. This worker, known only as Jody, who refused to give her name to the ABC, applied for at least 10 farm jobs through Employment Marketplace Seek, through the government's The Harvest Trail job board, which, just as a side note, does sound like an expansion pack for Animal Crossing, where you work for the other people's farms instead of sustaining your own due to a game-wide blight on half of the crops. But just, that's just my thoughts. She also looked on Gumtree, which no real surprises there. The only reliable jobs on Gumtree are the ones that require you to do the job in either your underpants or naked. And through social media, and through AgriLabor Australia. So you'd be hard-pressed to say that she wasn't trying. Mutual obligations do only require you to apply for 4 jobs a month at the moment, and the fact that she went for 10 is above and beyond. She even tried just showing up to jobs. She says, "I figured I'll turn up with my work boots and my hat and just go to work." But there's not even an option for that, because they're not interested. I have tried this same tactic at jobs that I want, and I must say that when I showed up to NASA in my blue polo and homemade lanyard and a can-do attitude, they wouldn't even let me into the staff break room. So I feel you, Jody, I feel you. On another occasion, she was asked to fill out a 100-question questionnaire for a job picking cherries. 100 questions. I have applied for government jobs that are classified as skilled jobs, or at least require a degree, and answered less questions than that. Most jobs that I've applied for don't ask for much short of, "Are you a thief?" and "Will you wear pants if required?" This obviously raises some red flags. She told the ABC that she was starting to think some farmers might prefer migrant workers to Australians because they would be less likely to complain about small wages. Noting, "I know that a lot of them live on site and that employers charge them accommodation and all that sort of stuff." The government and the media are trying very hard to sell you on this narrative of the lazy job seeker and the poor, embattled farmer, when it is actually the fruit pickers who are the ones being exploited. This way we don't feel bad when we almost inevitably force them out there to do some picking in order to earn their dole. Pick for the dole. I can't say that pick for the dole isn't a very appealing offer, as historically, there have been issues with little things like getting paid. And that's not to mention that the amount they weren't paid was not even the promised $500 for 30 hours, which would put it at roughly $16 an hour, a full $1.70 under the 2016 minimum wage, which is a far cry from the $27 an hour cash bonanza that they are promising for moving out into the unpaid zone. Australians don't need to travel all the way to remote farms in order to experience wage theft and exploitation. They can get that experience at their local supermarket, and they don't even have to pay to live at their supermarket. at least not yet anyway, will eventually come to a sort of live-in-work situation as a solution to the housing crisis, but that's a disaster for another episode. Furthering this lazy narrative and showing that he thoroughly misunderstands the job, the nature of these kinds of jobs, and what bosses think of their workers, McCormack, remember McCormack? He's back, and he said, tell them to bring their mobile with them, because it would be a great Instagram moment for them to get up in a tree and pick some fruit. But hey, let's ask someone who's actually done the job. Oh, here's one I prepared earlier. Actual man who did the job, Luca Ralston. He said, use of the phones while we were working was actually prohibited, and we got told not to have our phones out while we were working. So, another reason not to go out there, you can't even get some sweet social media pics of you having your wages stolen and your spirit broken. You really need to capture a few photos of yourself, like before a situation destroys you, and then some after that situation has destroyed you, so that you can see how much character that you've developed in your time there. But here we go, Michael McCormack, he took to the airways to inspire a generation of Australians, trying to survive a pandemic with a thrilling, moving, poignant speech. What did he tell the youth? That they had nothing to fear, but fear, to not ask what their country could do for them, or perhaps third example of a stirring speech. No, not at all. He told them the party was over. He said, I say to those who perhaps have done reasonably well off JobSeeker, who may have earned more than they could have dreamt of, it is perhaps time to turn the Stan and Netflix off and come to the regions where you can have a better life. So aside from thinking that those on JobSeeker have very small dreams, or perhaps lack a capacity for imagination, I guess this must be why they are hitting the arts so harshly with fees of plus 130%. If your population lacks imagination, then they can't dream of anything better. But according to Services Australia, if you move to an area of lower employment prospects, you can lose up to 26 weeks' pay. That is 6 months. 6 months without money in an area that they know has less jobs, which you likely move to so you can afford to have shelter. And this certainly goes against the philosophy shared with me by an Australian old-timer out in a country town when he said, with a voice that cracked like it hadn't had water for nearly a decade, there's always work somewhere if you're willing to travel. Presumably because he thought that I was out in regional Victoria looking to find work and not on a casual holiday visiting family, the very antithesis of looking for work. But 6 months, man, 6 months, presumably without a job or money to pay for travel to prospective job interviews, leaves you with little to do except watch Netflix. And finally, weird nature news. The first complete map of the platypus genome has been released, and it's every bit as strange as you'd expect from a creature with 10 sex chromosomes, a pair of venomous spurs, and a coat of fluorescent fur and skin that sweats milk. Yeah, that's right, sweats milk. Now we know platypus are part bird, part reptile, and part mammal, confirming the thought that we all had a long time ago, that the platypus is the mistaken love child of what would have been the inevitable orgy on Noah's Ark. It's bound to happen when you put that many animals together in a survival situation. Feelings are heightened, and like statistically, you're more likely to make a short but intense connection with someone, or many someones, and it's what happens at the end of every action movie when the two main protagonists hook up and they get together and they make a platypus, a creature that should never have existed. Like turning The Hobbit into three films. Really, you're just trying to cram too many things into what should be a simple creature. Evolutionary biologist Guje Zhang from the University of Copenhagen said, "We had a common ancestor which lived more than 170 million years ago, alongside the early dinosaurs in the Jurassic period. And so now, when I look at the platypus, all I can do is wonder when the breakout attack will happen, and we will die due to platypus attack, and it will all happen to the sweeping, mellifluous sounds of a John Williams score." Beautiful. You never forget the first moment that you're openly flabbergasted by the presence of nature's Frankenstein monster, the platypus. Another new study in the Journal of Australian Mammalogy shows evidence the once widespread mammal is in trouble in Australia. Its only home on the planet. Can you believe that we've let this happen? We're losing a lot of animals due to the fires. Seems we need to start storing animals in some sort of doomsday bunker. I think we might be able to convince the government to spend money on a doomsday bunker to store our endangered animals. We have been overspending a lot of money recently on land. Just so much money on land. We just need to find a friend of the Liberal Party who has some land that we can buy. It can double up as a bunker for the rich when the country turns into an unlivable hellhole. It's just the best investment for the country, honestly. Every rich person could really use their own platypus, right? It's just an interesting and fascinating pet. And all they need is someone to look after them, which gives a lot of us a chance to reskill as their official platypus carer. To be honest, it's a more solid retirement plan than the one that I have right now, which is work until I am too damn old and then die right after I retire. I'll be your platypus carer. Come find me. We here at the Bearer of Weird News are considering taking the platypus as our official unofficial mascot. Most Australians will take the kangaroo or the koala as their animal choice, but the platypus has been there the whole time, laying eggs and sweating milk, and nobody has been paying attention. That feels like a very relatable sense of existence. We've just been here this whole time, nobody paying attention to us. Besides, at this point, I suspect that there isn't anything that isn't true when it comes to the platypus, and we, the good people here at the Bearer of Weird News Science Labs, have been working hard to unlock the secrets of the platypus. Not only does its fur glow neon green in dark light, but their pupils are actually constantly flowing up and down and around, like a lava lamp. That is a fact. Their fur is thick and matted, which actually makes it bulletproof, stab-proof, and bomb-proof, which means that we can just strap a bunch of platypus to a soldier in combat, and they will be indestructible. With the added bonus of confusing enemy troops as to why they are being stormed by such a confusing creature. Little known fact, they actually masterminded the emu war, riding the emus into battle like the dumb giant bird that they are, parading their superior powers of indestruction over the measly humans simply because they could. This war was simply a warning. There are no recorded cases of a platypus killing a human, because they are excellent at covering up their crimes, taking the humans down to their secret lairs to dispose of the evidence. No one will ever know. Platypus milk can not only provide a solution to antibiotic-resistant germs, but also to longer life, titanium bones, and the secret to the meaning of life, which is why it is so closely guarded. You'll never see it on the supermarket shelf. Go ahead and look. You won't find it. They are so feared, they haven't even turned them into a Pokemon yet. And they have a Pokemon that are rocks and apples and dragons and ghosts and just the very idea of electricity. That is how respected they are. And they are so Australian that they are actually the origin of the famous yeah nah saying, as it was the answer given when someone asked if they could see a platypus in the wild. You're like, yeah, nah. Guys, that is it. We've come to the end of the episode. Thanks for making it to the end of another episode. Thanks for hanging out and listening to all our nonsense. And if you've enjoyed it, please do share it. You know what to do, all the things. Rate and like us on iTunes, share us on Facebook, all those sort of things. All the liking. Come see the live shows if you can, or the digital show if you can't see the live shows. We've got a lot going on, and we feel like this is the best way to support us, and we'd love to see some of your smiling faces out on the stage. But thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time. Thank you.